It's time for Supply Chain Now. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Heard around the world, Supply Chain Now spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. And now, here are your hosts.
Hey, good afternoon. Scott Luton, Greg White with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's show. On this episode, we're speaking with a business leader from a company that helps organizations globally transform their procure-to-pay and order-to-cash cycles. So stay tuned as we're going to be working really hard to increase your supply chain IQ. Greg White, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm always interested in this. It seems like anything to do with procurement is really, really top of mind these days, right?
Absolutely.
Tremendous transformation through this crisis.
Yes, agreed. And of course, the months ahead, procurement's not going anywhere.
Right.
This is going to be a good show. Hey, quick programming note before we get started with our featured guests here today. If you enjoy today's episode, hey, find us and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We publish Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturday. It's a lot of hard work covering the global end-to-end supply chain. So check us out and subscribe so you don't miss a single thing. Let's bring in our featured guest, Dan Reeves, Director of Direct Sales for North America at Esker. Dan, good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing? Good to see you again, gents.
Good to see you too.
Welcome back.
And that's where we want to start because we love our repeat guests, Dan. We got a ton of feedback both on your expertise as well as the great stories you shared on your first episode with us a month or two ago. So great to have you back.
Thank you. I do have a new story for you.
Oh.
Just time today.
Really?
I'm really proud of my wife. So, you know, we talked about my military background the last time we were here. So when I was in the military, one of my friends who actually came to work for Esker when he left the military, he was an attack army helicopter pilot. And he told me this technique. He says, if you ever want to milk your stuff and know if somebody's taken your book or your pencil or whatever, you know, your boots, it's easy. He says, you write on it, stolen from Dan Reeve. Somebody says, no, they're my boots. No, they're mine. Well, it's easy. You just, there you go. It says so, okay? So I opened up the fridge today, and I've told my wife this story, and Dave, he was at my wedding, and his uniform was always smarter and was sexier than mine. He's an attack helicopter pilot. He looks
right.
Good. Anyway, so he taught me this technique. Well, my wife picked up on it. I opened the fridge today, and it says, all the milk is labeled, stolen from Dan Reeve. Stolen from Zoe, stolen from Stella. Basically, it's their way of making sure that I don't take parts that are designed for, you know, the other children, the milk. This is your milk. This is their milk. Behave yourself. So I was just so proud that she was calling me out. Basically, she's labeled milk like, don't steal other people's milk. I'm like, okay.
We need visual management, and we need those reminders every once in a while. So thanks for sharing on the front end. I tell you, there are no such thing as dull days these days. Dan, great to have you back.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue down this path, Greg, because before we jump into procure to pay and order to cash, let's get to know Dan a little bit better this go around. Okay, you ready? For starters, let's refresh. We kind of walked into your background, as you alluded to, Dan, your first time around, but let's refresh our listeners' memories. Where are you from? And give us another anecdote or two about your upbringing.
I'm from Norfolk, the original Norfolk. I'm from Norwich, England. When I first came to the U.S. and I met my wife in a cornfield in Wisconsin, literally, you know, the reality is Wisconsin is very similar to Norfolk. Norfolk's it's a farming community. It's flat. And being a mountaineer and a rock climber, I knew I had to grow up and leave there one day. But so Norwich is the capital. The commonality with Wisconsin is, so in Norwich, my team, Norwich City, some of you who follow the Premier League know we got booted out this year.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, it happens. And then, but they have the same colors as the Green Bay Packers. So you know, when you marry a girl in Wisconsin, that's what happens. I think you have the Kansas City Chiefs in the background.
You're correct.
I married a Packer family, and you know, and they were like, "You're going to marry our daughter. You're going to become a Packer fan."
That's so, right. That's how it works. Enough.
Yeah, it's part of, it's the contract.
Now, do you get to make them a Norwich fan? That's the question.
Actually, they've I mean, even and some of my colleagues at work have. I don't know if they would, you know, they would thank me for it, but they, you know, every time I go home, I might get one of the engineers or the professional services staff a jersey, and then they become Norwich fans. So. You know, long either suffering or you know, Norwich fans, I'm not sure.
Well, I feel your pain. I became a Tottenham Hotspur fan in the mid-80s, which were not good years, and right. It has come around somewhat in the last few years, but I empathize, believe me.
Short note on that, 2 years ago, I was sat with one of my Esker colleagues in the away end, in the season ticket holders end at Tottenham, and Norwich were beating your team.
Right.
And sit there and not say anything because you know, I'm surrounded by
three. They would beat you.
Yeah, 3,000, and it's great because they're all singing, "You're just a bunch of farmers," to the Norwich fans, and I'm one of them. Thinking, yeah.
Well, all right. So we could dive into the real football hour here. It sounds like
right. Between
both y'all's passions for that game, but let's. What else about other experience really sticks out that was formative to you as when you were growing up?
Yeah, you know, I was lucky. I managed to go to I actually got picked up and went to a boarding school. You know, ironically, you'll laugh. I wrote a letter to the Prime Minister saying, "Well, we're not so sure." I was kind of goaded a little bit by my mother to write a letter to the Prime Minister. I wanted to get into this semi-public boarding school. A lot of military families went there and well-to-do families. And so I wrote this letter to the Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher. And she wrote back, saying, "Well, I want to have this career in the military, and I'm not sure if I can achieve it through the local schools." And she wrote back, her personal secretary said, "I've spoken to the Prime Minister, and we're very confident in your ability to be successful in the local schools, and we wish you all the best with your chosen career, and we really enjoyed your letter." Well, I got a scholarship 2 days later, and I'm not sure if that's a coincidence.
Wow, man.
I've lost the letter. I couldn't find the letter.
Oh, no.
It was signed by Margaret Thatcher and her personal secretary. So, you know, that's probably sales. That was probably the best sale I ever pulled off, you know, 8-11.
You won over the Iron Lady. That is impressive.
Greg, if we get stuck in a situation, we know who we're going to.
I'm telling you, I'm a huge Margaret Thatcher fan. She was a fantastic leader.
So speaking of that, we're going to move now, Dan, into the lightning round. And this is where we're going to just pop a couple questions to you, get your quick take, but we're going to wrap on leadership. So stay tuned because I want to see who else sticks out. So first question here, what's your favorite movie all time?
Platoon.
Platoon. Okay.
Wow.
Man, knew that right off.
That's heady. Yeah.
Your favorite recent read or go-to news source?
Somebody recently gave me the book Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. I have a 3-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old, and I'm reading that, and they implored me, said, "You've got to read it. You need to understand how important your role is." And I'm reading that, and I'm like, wow, I need to do a good job here. I didn't realize just how important, you know, being a strong dad is for girls.
That's outstanding.
Strong father, strong daughters.
As a father of daughters, Scott's writing it down.
That's right. I did. All right. So, and as we wrap up this lightning round, and before we dive into a lot more industry conversation, who is your favorite inspirational leader and why?
I think Captain Dale Dye. Some of you may have seen him on many movies. He was in Saving Private Ryan. He was in Platoon. He was the company commander in Platoon. I met him in a bar in Vancouver, and this is one of my best stories. I hadn't planned to have children. I met him in a bar. We got talking for 3 hours, and at the end of that conversation, one night he turned around and he just hit me in the stomach, and he said, "Do you have children?" And I said, "No, you know, cats and dogs, that's us." He hit me in the stomach, and he said, "Life's what you give, not what you get." And he says, "You are going to regret this." And the guy, and he used a few expletives as well. A guy who I always thought, if I ever get the chance to meet this guy, we could have a great conversation. We talked about both his experiences of 2 tours in Vietnam, how he met Oliver Stone, how he got into the film industry. And we talked about the stuff I like to do, mountaineering. And he's like, "You like doing that stuff?" And anyway, we had such a great conversation. It was almost like when you get to meet one of your heroes, you always imagine how you could have a great conversation. I got to do that with my hero. And we had a couple of beers in the bar. And at the end, he just punched me in the stomach and came home. My wife's like, I've been thinking about this too. And if it hadn't been for that, I don't know if it would have happened. But, you know, and what the cool thing is, what a humble guy. I wrote back to him twice and said, great, you know, Stella was born, Zoe was born. And both times he wrote back and said, you've made my day. What a humble, but he, and I think what I appreciate his leadership style is he went from being there, he was a sergeant in the Marines. He got wounded twice in Vietnam, but he was a Mustang. He became an officer. And I've always had a lot of respect for folks that know the job and then get promoted, and then they can still do the job, but they can lead as well. And I think for me, he's clearly had a big impact on my life.
What a great story, powerful story. Dan, you never disappoint, and great to have you back here with us here on Supply Chain Now. All right, so Greg, we've got to get to work showcasing his thought leadership.
I guess, right? I'd love to talk more about that, but yes, let's get to work. So Dan, tell us a little bit, for the folks that don't know already, tell us a little bit about Esker, you know, what the company does, how you play in the ecosystem, and your role there.
Sure. So I'm the director of field sales. I have two teams that I support. I have a team of sales folks that work with our customers on order to cash. And then I have another team that does procure to pay. And in plain English, order to cash is, think of it where, okay, so you might need to credit check your customer, make sure that they're entitled to the right credit and there's no risk of taking them on board. They're not a bad actor. Process the order. Let's get that order fed into the ERP system as quickly as we can without making any errors. Let's delight the customer and let's not blow up accounts receivable or collections. Let's automate that process. The order is fed into the ERP correctly, no issues, and free up those customer service reps to service the customer, get to know the customer better, maybe upsell the customer. And then let's deliver the invoice and collect the money and apply the cash. Pure to pay side, it's all about, you know, automating accounts payable and providing more visibility and control of spend. I have to be honest with you, with COVID in March, we had quite a few projects that where they suddenly went on hold because everybody was, you know, wondering, well, what's going to happen here? But since then, what we've seen is our share prices hit an all-time high, massive amount of interest as supply chain leaders have really focused on, okay, how are we going to be more efficient? How are we going to allow people in order to cash, order management, payables, work from home? How are we going to sort of, you know, be efficient? So there's been a real big increase. And especially as well, I'm going to talk a little bit more today about order management and collecting the cash. Been a real, real sudden spike in interest there.
So I'm curious how companies, you know, we talked a lot about how this seismic societal disruption has changed the landscape of the workplace and operations and that sort of thing. So I'm curious, how do companies use your system in that environment?
Our technology, if we think about orders or invoices, I mean, one of the things we've heard from if I think about, you know, the invoices you might receive from your suppliers, is often in the past they would get sent to an office and accounts payable manager or the finance director might have to go and pick those up. That's not popular. People didn't want to go into an office and expose themselves. But, and at the same time, those folks, both in accounts payable and order management, wanted to be able to work from home. I'll give you an example. LifeNet is one of our life science companies. They do great work with grafts and human tissue. So, you know, somebody unfortunately passes, they're able to sort of gift those essential tissues to other families. Mm-hmm. They said, Dan, we were one of the first, our two departments that use your technology for capture, you know, order management and accounts payable automation, we were the two departments allowed to go home first. Typically, the leadership here have been really hesitant and not keen to allow anybody to work from home, but we were able to prove, hey, look, we can do our job. We can flip immediately to working from home. And there's no downside. Yes, I realize there's value in people getting together and
right,
seeing one another and being able to, you know, break bread, etc. But our technology is allowing people to work from home. I think what COVID has done Hackett will say this, Gartner will say this. If you had a broken process, suddenly the spotlight is on that broken process, that manual process.
Undoubtedly.
To see, yeah.
Undoubtedly, yeah. And that's why I was curious, because it seems like systems, solutions like yours, they're a great catalyst in times like these. There are no boundaries with solutions like yours. So let's talk a little bit about order to cash. And understand that you're talking to kind of a newbie in the procurement space, Scott. Oh, no, it's me. So tell our listeners who probably aren't as familiar. I'm completely familiar, but tell our listeners who might not be familiar, what is order to cash? What is that cycle? And why is it such a priority?
I'm going to give a shout out to Chris Poole. He's the managing director of Gartner. He's also an Englishman. Now, his team is not as good as my team, but I think he's a QPR fan, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is he really? Okay.
Yeah. My uncle was too, for some reason. But order to cash. And I had this conversation with Chris not long back. And I said, Chris, why do supply chain leaders care about order to cash? What do you think there's more focus here during COVID? What's going on? And he said, well, speed to turn an order from an email order, an EDI order, a paper order, whatever it is, a PDF order, the speed that you can take that and convert that into money into your bank account is critical. Now, clearly, it has to go through some steps. You've got to credit check the customer, onboard the customer, process the order, supply them on time, in full, the right SKUs, the right components, what they're expecting. Ideally, if you see that there's a problem or they're ordering a price or a quantity or SKU that doesn't work, alert them, let them know and fix it. But the speed with which you get that money in your bank it's a very, very important metric that companies measure, because, companies often spend a lot of time on collecting the money. Okay. And if you've created problems in order management, that makes it harder to collect the money. They want a new float. They want a new 30 days, 60 days, 90.
Right.
So the speed with which you can get your money back in is really important. And what Chris said as well is he said, the supply chain leader often owns payables. They often own order management or order acquisition, and they often own inventory. And right now, they're probably under more pressure to lower inventory. They're overall being pressured from the CFO and the CRO to reduce the cost of goods sold and to collect their money faster, the day sales outstanding. So ultimately, there's pressure from the C-suite to do more, be faster, be efficient, and not have to borrow money from the banks or lower your average weighted cost of capital.
I can see that completely, right? As all commerce stopped for a few days, and then as it slowly started to climb back and dip again, and whatever dynamics various companies might have had, I can see that it's a very material effect on companies. So it seems like visibility would be a big issue, especially when you're in a time of disruption like we have been and still are in many, many cases. So how does the enablement of visibility in terms of procure to pay and order to cash, how does that help an organization, or how does that guide a supply chain leader to make decisions or take action?
We talked last time about how supply chain owners were often having to work with new suppliers and might need to onboard them quicker and do the due diligence to make sure that supplier was not a bad actor or not proposing a risk. So supply information management, supply onboarding. The same is really, this is another area we've seen a lot of interest, is for customers. For example, let's say you're going to supply a company in the restaurant industry. Well, they've been, I don't know if decimated is the correct word, but
I think that'll do. Yeah.
Yeah. The reality is you need to know if the credit history or the new credit score for that company, and maybe this is a company you already deal with, but what we're hearing is from both on the procure to pay and on the order to cash side is customers are saying, bring us insightful alerts, bring us analytics and warn us if that customer we used to deal with there, I don't know, if they're doing more business with us and we should know there's a risk, let us know. If they've gone into receivership or there's some kind of new alert from Dun & Bradstreet that says, hey, those guys, you might want to ask them to pay a bit more upfront. Or you might want to change their terms, or the minute you send the invoice, you send a performer warning you about to send the invoice, you send a statement, and you know, you tighten up your collection strategy around that customer or your credit strategy. What we see is that companies are saying, we want that insight. We don't want to get caught off guard. Bring us both customers and suppliers.
Yeah, you know, I had not thought about the dynamic. I mean, we've talked about it a bunch, Scott, but I had not thought about the dynamic on those cycles of having a whole list, potentially a whole list of new suppliers, you know, the difficulty in onboarding them and then getting payment programs and order programs set up. So it's really interesting. Is there anything else, you know, around either in the procure to pay or order to cash, or just generally that supply chain folks are talking about, concerned about right now? I mean, this time of disruption has caused so many challenges. I'm curious what else you're seeing as a concern or an action or even an initiative.
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, I don't think ERP projects are off the table. I think a lot of companies, a lot of our business right now is companies look at existing tools that they have in either in order to cash or procure to pay and say, we've had those tools in place a long time. They're not giving us as much value as we expected. We're not getting the support we expect from those vendors. We want more. We need to embrace machine learning, advanced intelligence, RPA, be it on the order to cash or procure to pay side. So there's a lot of that going on, which is leading to people coming in and chatting with us.
That's actually really encouraging that companies have recognized those flaws and are starting to act on them. You know, I think early in this situation, Dan, we heard there were sort of two types of companies, those that are buckling down with the systems that they have and trying to grind their way through it, and those who are taking the time to analyze the effectiveness and efficiency of the tool sets that they have and considering new solutions there. Are you seeing that?
Absolutely. And I mean, ironically, yes, there was a delay and a pause March, April, but since then, and there's a lot of Hackett and Gartner and various white papers talking about how companies have really come back in to focus on technology. You know, the reality is our share price is at an all-time high, and I think it's because we're in the right place at the right time. And my friend at Gartner actually said, you know, you're in the right place. He says companies are being pushed to look at technology. They're being pushed to make sure that they're as efficient as possible and they're not at risk.
Sounds like to me, similar to other automation plays, is that, I mean, y'all have been doing, you've had the expertise and the products and the programs for a long time, but the market is viewing that less risky now and more of a necessity in the business.
Well, you know, that's a great point. My boss often used to say, you know, in the sales rep here, let's compare a sales rep at Esker to a sales rep at, I don't know, my friend works for Cisco, and she's great. Did they have to put in automation and efficiency like the likes that we offer? In the past, maybe not. Now I think it's become a necessity, just like security is a necessity. You've got to have security. But I think what's happened now is being able to collect efficiently, being able to make sure there's no maverick spending and control your spend and pay your suppliers quickly, maybe be able to earn early payment discounts really quickly, being able to make sure you're not exposed with too much spend. There's no big liabilities out there that could catch the CFO off guard.
Interestingly enough, you're talking about early payment and also our elements of securing your global supply chain, right? Taking care of your suppliers and customers and vice versa. You know, Greg, just a week or so ago, we talked about that Wall Street Journal article where some of the larger companies out there were paying their suppliers early,
right,
to protect and insulate them from some of the factors, the negative factors out there in the economy. And there was one big global aviation company that made an early payment to one of its suppliers, and it allowed them to not lay off any more employees and keep producing parts. And where this is clearly relevant with what Esker does is you've got to be you got to have the visibility, you've got to have the strong and robust processes, you've got to be in a position to be able to take advantage of some of those moves if if it means, you know, protecting and securing your global supply chain and keeping things moving. So there's so many different elements to what you and the Esker team does, and that's more hyper relevant than perhaps just 6 months ago, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
It's amazing how fast we're moving here. Yeah. So Greg, I think you've really effectively set the table. So you and Dan, very nice job. I want to keep going I want to keep going down this path of some of the observations you're seeing in industry, Dan. You've already, you know, I appreciate what you shared about LifeNet, and I appreciate what you've shared about the example of onboarding suppliers and really making that due diligence process be so much more efficient and less time intensive and perhaps less resource intensive. What other bottlenecks do you see that are popping up in different stages of the order to cash process that really, you know, disrupts a company's supply chain or disrupts other aspects of the organization?
A couple of things. I think one, companies and supply chain leaders need to remember, it's not a case of just receiving the order, shipping the goods on time in full. You've also got to make sure that you're able to collect the money and apply the money. Because often when the check or the money comes in from the bank or lockbox, there's a ton of work involved in saying, well, okay, I see you sending me an invoice or you sent me a check for $100,000. Which of my divisions is this? Which invoices is this? And is this some kind of short pay? You've taken a deduction. Is that fair? There's a lot of interest in that. And a lot of companies want to quickly get into, is this a deduction that was fair, planned deduction, or is this a deduction that we need to challenge and dispute? And it can be difficult to get your hands on all those details. I remember being in Atlanta a couple of years ago, and I was talking to one of the large companies down there, and I said, why does this matter? And he said, I'll tell you why it matters, Dan, is we have 1% planned deductions off invoice. We give our distributors a 1% discount for carrying and promoting our product, okay? And then they said, but there's often these unexpected discounts, and we want to dive deeper, because one of the things that we've seen is going on is when we started to spend time, and it takes a lot of time for the credit analysts, the AR, and various departments, even the warehouse to get involved and investigate, is this fair? Are we doing something wrong? We were getting lots of errors. So we were getting lots of deductions. And it was because our packaging we were using was not up to scratch. A lot of the time we were delivering the product, it was getting damaged on our dock or their dock. And now we're basically losing money. But we couldn't really figure it out. And the devil was in the details. Technology was needed to go out and look at their website and pull in collections notes, bill of ladings, and mm-hmm. all this information and make it apparent quickly, hey, they short paid you. There's a reason why. They short paid you. This was not fair. You shouldn't be taking this short pay. So a lot of supply chain leaders and others, my advice is they are starting to ask, not how quickly are we doing in processing the order and sending the invoice, but can we recognize and apply that cash?
Some of what you're speaking to there is how one decision made here impacts severely a couple of nodes down in the supply chain or different departments or different functional areas. You'll see a lot of that.
Yeah. And then another example would be if you key in an order wrong, okay, just a tax code or the SKU or the, you know, just small little details. You don't use their PO number. And I don't know if the order acquisition, the order management folks always, sometimes it seems that we didn't cause any problems for AR collections. We do a great job. We feed the order in time and it's all good. You've got to have a chat with a collections team. They're like, you've blown up a whole process. We're trying to chase the customer. The customer's, well, you didn't reference our PO number. You're not paying that. And if it had been put into the ERP at the time the order came in, you wouldn't have had so many collection problems. So that's going on. The final one I'll leave you with this, go back to the restaurant example. Your example was how the aviation company said, we might take care of our suppliers and pay them early. I think as much as there's a bit of that going on, the norm has been customers are saying, hey, we want to pay 90 days.
Right.
Into 90, yeah. 10, 90 days. And there's a lot of that going on, and you have to ask yourself, okay, but do you have a Hackett promote this, Hackett Group, do you have a strategy that says, we don't just go, oh, right, well, fine, we'll give you 90 days, and we'll eat that cost of capital and borrow in more money. We'll finance you. No, you need to have some kind of strategy because that is going on left and right across the industry.
Yeah, agreed. In fact,
heard about that.
The airlines industry, the article spoke about a couple of those companies in that industry that are doing just like you're saying, and it's widespread, as you said, Dan. Hey, one other, going back to how you were talking about the different departments and how one department does this and that ripple effect, and oftentimes there's a lack of communication there. They don't even know of the problems that they're causing. You know, one of my favorite parts of my journey is doing value stream mapping with all of the team of an organization, right, regardless of function, and all the eureka moments that came from one department saying, oh, this is why I do this, it was causing this. I mean, it's the learnings when you see that the whole supply chain or the whole system laid out. It's really amazing. I bet y'all have to really dive in deep to that to bring the full bear of what you do or a full value of what you do to bear to for your clients. So one last thing before I turn it back over to Greg here is you've already touched on a few things that supply chain leaders might be overlooking, right? When it comes to improving their order cash cycle as a whole. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention in terms of what these leaders are overlooking when they look to, move at the speed of 2020 and beyond?
I think a couple of things. I mean, we talked about the examples there. I mean, it's worth getting the order acquisition team, the planners and the collections team, I'm going to say on the Zoom call or a team Microsoft Teams call, and be like, okay, well, what happens when, what are the reasons that we cannot collect our money efficiently? What are the reasons they push back on the invoice? What are the reasons when the money comes in that we struggle to work out what invoice are they paying off? Or why do they take that short pay? I think if you can identify those start listing those top reasons, then the folks in order management or the supply chain or the delivery team, or even the sales rep might say, or somebody who oversees that group, the supply chain leader might say, look, these are all the cascading things we're getting because we're doing something wrong at the order entry level, for example. Or there's an opportunity for us to improve our master data or for them to improve their master data. Listing out those things that are going wrong and then the organization can say, well, we might be able to stop that. We didn't realize that we were impacting you guys in that way.
Yep. Greg, a little bit of what I heard there is bringing those below surface level issues, bringing them up topside so folks can see them and then do something about it.
Yeah, and I think that's, that's an interesting segue, frankly, is I'm really interested in what you see leaders doing to manage things, right? Everyone is at more risk probably than they've ever been in their career at this point, right?
Right.
And what do you see the finance and accounting and supply chain leaders doing to compensate or correct or protect them and their organizations in times like this?
I think one of the things that companies are focusing on right now is making it easy to do business with them. Okay, so will you, yes, flexibility. Okay, you're asking for new terms. Okay, we can do that, but I'm going to ask you to pay a bit more. I'm going to ask you to pay slightly differently. So being able to horse trade. I think companies are trying to be what we see is companies are doing really well is they're trying to be easy to deal with both their suppliers and their customers. Because, if you send an invoice and it can't just, they're going to think on their side, their accounts payable team, they just want to pay the invoice and get it approved and paid quickly. In fact, if they do that really quickly, maybe they can get you to agree to an early payment discount.
Right.
From a supply chain finance point of view, you help them out a little bit. Also, the supply chain leader, if they can free up their team to better understand their customers because they're not keying in orders or making errors and sending bad invoices. But if they can free up their team to better educate the client, look at the process, understand the master data that you in your order ERP need to clean up or they need to clean up and you advise them of such, but fundamentally retain the client, be easy to deal with and go and offer them insights get to know your business better. There's a company in Chicago that's a chemical, they're in the chemical industry. they grew sales, I think, just with their customer service reps, more than $1 million every month, because the reps got to know the business. Okay, back then they said, CSRs, we know you guys don't normally go on the road, but once or twice a year, we do want you to go visit the customer and get to know them. As a result, they started supersizing their orders and they started winning more business just because of the CSR understood their business and they had a less friction and a better relationship. That can still happen now, just because the CSRs cannot go and meet that company, probably not. They can get to know them better. And I think if you put in technology, this is what, you asked me about books earlier. I got off social media 2 years ago because some Melissa Brown at AQPC said, go read Cal Newport's book. It's called Deep Work. And she says, when you free up your business teams, your customer service teams, they can focus more on deep work with your customers and internal social work where you build better relationships between departments. Oh, and by the way, Cal says, you know, so you really focus on, when you've got to do work, you really focus and get off social media because that's a distraction. You know? So,
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening, Dan. I was on Twitter. What? I'm just kidding.
So this is where, you know, I'm kind of coming at this from all different angles. What I see is companies saying, right, we want to be efficient. We want to survive this. We've got to collect our money and be as efficient as we can. We want to retain our customers and be easy to deal with. And part of that is making sure that we understand their business. We advise them correctly. We process their orders really fast. We can supersize and get more revenue. We don't lose any customers. Oh, and, you know, of course, the pressure is to be efficient, collect money, lower your working your weighted average cost of borrowing money, basically. And if you do all of that, let's not forget something you said a minute ago about crisis. Gartner's advice is do not waste a crisis. Innovate in the turns. That's what companies are doing right now. I've literally had CIOs say, I want to come out of this stronger. We want to come out of this and be in a better position or stronger position than our competitors. So for me, I'll be honest, there's days when that gives me hope and I feel great about seeing people get used to what we're dealing with, but fight through it and innovate and they'll come out in a better position protecting their careers and their companies.
Yeah, likewise, we hear that story a lot and it is encouraging to know that companies are preparing for the future and that they're preparing, as you said, to be better, stronger in the future. So I'm curious, as you lower the burden or the friction to onboard and do business with you, it seems like that would increase the risk somewhat. Are there particular things that leaders are looking for? I mean, credit alerts or things like that, any kind of information that they're seeking to help mitigate that risk once they have lowered the barriers to entry somewhat?
I was thinking about this ahead of time. So I think some of the things that are going on, you know, 60% of your issues that happen in problems in AR are caused by, at the order management level. So yes, you can do better credit checking. Yes, you have a review process. If people want to change their credit terms, you don't just automatically do it. There's a set process and there's procedures. Okay, we can give them 30, 60, 90 days, but this is what we're going to ask for in return. Longer contract, or maybe you increase the price per SKU a little bit, et cetera, et cetera. So have a procedure there versus, oh, you need longer terms? Sure. You know, let's be honest. I'm sure there's leaders laughing at my comment there saying, Dan, don't be silly. We don't just give it away. Yes, you know, you want to put in checks to help prevent fraud and avoid duplicates. I think here's another one. Companies are saying to me, we want to know our total risk. Because we want to see our total spend across, if we're dealing with Amazon, and Esther's got 13 offices around the world, okay, well, just how much spend have I got with Amazon all around the world? Or how much liability do I have with this customer who we've shipped them a load of products? But how much, you know, what are the overall terms? What's the overall amount of revenue at risk with this company? Because this company, maybe many companies inside multiple divisions, sum that up, give me an overall visual of my risk.
Yeah, I think that's important. You know, it's funny, you went to the immediate question I had when you were talking about the risk of making it easy to do business with suppliers. I immediately thought, how do you, in a time like this of great disruption, how do you corral, I don't know what you would call it, renegade spending maverick spending, whatever you want to call it. How do you corral and assure that that's not happening? Because you've got new environment, you've got new suppliers, and you've got to move fast. So those kind of alerts are really, really valuable. Do you see any difference? You deal with manufacturers and distributors, correct, predominantly?
Sure. Yeah.
Do you see any difference in how those types of organizations are attacking this problem, or?
A little bit. I think the usual argument I hear from, maybe argument's not the right word, but you know, distributors typically, they're making a few points on every transaction, so their margins tend to be smaller. Understood. When it comes to collecting revenue, collecting money, here's some of the things that I see distributors do, and this is a best practice, is they put all their customers on an auto pay. Okay, so as far as possible, we're going to put all of our customers on an automatic payment, get them to use our portal, and this time of each month, we're going to automatically bill you and collect. That's actually an industry best practice in this AR, accounts receivable space. You know, make online payment really easy for them, to the point where they're saying, oh, it's just easier to pay online, I will. My personal view is, you know, I think there are some tools out there, the really, really big procurement suite, you know who I'm talking about, the biggest one.
I've heard of it, yeah.
They often charge customers and suppliers for interacting. I'm like, okay, well, just make it really easy for your customer to go and pay you online and don't penalize them for doing so. The other thing you can do is, I think we see distributors applying tighter payment plans, tighter reminder schedules. So one of the things we do is we provide, think of it as a CRM for collections. So we help bring insights based on payment history and changing payment history. We say, hey, your collection team was due to chase these customers today. Actually, we think, you know, we're going to produce a new list saying based on payment trends and history and AI insights, chase these guys. Okay, so and as part of that, you might send invoices, reminders, statements, part of your dunning process. You might tighten that up on certain customers, you know, and then distributors might need to do this especially because their margin, they can't afford suddenly everybody's stretching terms to 90 days.
Right.
You know, the margins are being eroded.
Right.
They can't afford that.
So, Greg, we're kind of moving into the best practices and you know, Dan has shared a lot in the last first half of this interview, but let's keep going down this path and getting more best practices. And along those lines, Dan, you know, as supply chain leaders are evaluating order to cash automation solutions, what are a couple things that they've got to look out for?
Well, I think, I'll turn it around. I'll tell you what business leaders and CIOs say to me.
Okay, perfect.
This is one of my favorite parts of the job is, you know, I get wheeled in to talk to the CIO or the supply chain leader or the executive. Everybody here understands the technology far better than I do. I get to ask that, you know, and have really great conversations and say, well, how's your business? What's going on? What are you trying to achieve? And, you know, they just put the dumb guy in this position and gets to ask some interesting questions. And what I'm hearing from CIOs is this. Okay, we want to use AI, machine learning, all the latest technology to be as efficient as possible.
It's like I picture them going through a grocery store aisle. So I'll take that and that and that and that, and not maybe understanding exactly how they're applied or what the return is. And they put those desires, put it in your lap and expect you just to use your magic wand to make it happen, Dan.
There's a little bit of that. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to go off script here. There's a little bit where I think some companies, some C-level, the boards, they heard that when it came to that, you know, RPA, robotic process automation. Folks ran out and bought it. And so then it was like, well, find some way to use this. Well, we spent all this money on it. Our approach is a bit different. And I have customers who've done that and come back saying, didn't really work. You know, we're more of a best of breed suite for order to cash, procure to pay. Mm. We try and automate everything. We just try and stick to our lanes predominantly of where we're really good. So we are seeing supply chain leaders come back saying, okay, maybe I'm trying to absorb, you know, we still expect some growth, or I'm trying to make sure I don't make any errors, or I'm trying to make sure I don't have to keep hiring folks for order management. But what's changed for me in the last year or two has been this, the ability to do more with one single vendor. So the last four or five CIOs have said, Dan, we don't want 300, 350 vendors. We want to rationalize that. We did a bad job of understanding building partnership with vendors and expanding the solution set so that we could use not just all the technology in one cloud platform, but let's say I'm using you to send invoices, handle orders, see the spend that's going on. That's all data, common data flowing through your platform.
Mm-hmm.
Platform, bring me that insight. So if we go back 10 years ago on a wet, rainy day in Indiana, me and my boss are in this meeting, and I show this two fabulous wheels of all the things we do, and I can see them, the supply chain owner and the CIO. I'm surprised that their head didn't hit the desk.
Yeah, you can see their eyes glaze over, right?
Yeah, big time. What's really interesting is now I bring up these two wheels, and I just leave them there. And the supply chain owner and the finance team and then the CIO typically like, oh, so you do more than just AP, or you do procurement. You help onboard suppliers and then you help. What's this you do in order to cash? And I leave it there. And it's become a really interesting time. I think 10 years ago, I read an article from Technology Advisors. They were out of the Bay Area. And they talked about how the future would change and companies would spend more money with less vendors. And reps that were any good would understand the holistic needs of enterprises and do really well. But reps that couldn't do that, well, they would be out of sales. I read that about 10 years ago. But what I do see going on now is supply chain leaders, CIOs looking for more platforms that address both order to cash and procure to pay. That's what's got me more excited in 21 years at Esker than I've ever been before, you know. Or maybe the truth is nobody else would accept Dan or give Dan Reeve a job, so that's why I stayed here for that long. But you know, the truth is there's definitely a shift to automation, innovation, digital transformation.
Great segue, by the way. Thank you very much, Dan. I always love a good segue. Because we want to get your take on what to expect, maybe, with if your crystal ball isn't broken like mine's been broken for the last 17 years. Well, we want to kind of share with us what to expect moving forward. But before we do, Greg brought up the word friction earlier, and you mentioned, Dan, how one of your overarching goals is to help make business help. Make it easier to do business. So one last question before we move to the future. When it comes to reducing customer friction and making it easier to accept and recognize payments, you've already touched on a couple of things that companies are doing to do just that. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we leave that?
Well, I talked about payments. It's also worth talking about the order.
Mm.
I can describe Esker as a digital mop. It's not sexy, but we're a digital mop. So most companies, most folks listening have probably got some kind of e-commerce or there's best in class tools like Hybris out there, Magento, and EDI. I've got a blog coming out here shortly where I wrote about, well, one of the largest food manufacturers in the US, they use us with SAP. They've said, look, okay, we want to bring automation, we want to be more efficient, we want to be more agile. And what was really interesting is they said, the supply chain owner said before COVID, when she was signing up for the project, she said, look, I want to be able to quickly recognize rush orders, priority orders, have that flexibility. Maybe we change where we're going to ship product out of to a different DC. And I want to be able to recognize when the order comes in, you sense that demand, you sense that order, and you alert me that, hey, this probably needs to be prioritize because we've got to get it out of a different distribution unit. This is a key product. It's a white glove customer. There's a lot of interest in being able to do all of that. Here's where we're a digital mop. If you've got EDI and those orders flow in just perfectly fine, you don't need me. These guys said, you know what, Dan? We're looking at nearly every EDI order. There's a reason we've got to go do more research on the price, the SKU, the sales office. Hmm. And if we had AI machine learning that could help massage and get that EDI order in so our team don't have to look at it, now they can go spend more time servicing the customer. Now they can go and upsell, cross-sell, and provide more value. That they're using us for that. Now, the predominant reason they put us in for order automation, hey, we still get email orders. Okay, let's be honest, most companies are going to push to use e-commerce or EDI.
Right.
But you often get a fair amount of orders for you guys got a Swiss Army knife by any chance?
Not on me.
You know who they are then. They have 9% of their orders come in via email. And you might think 9% isn't a big deal. But they said, okay, so you know, you can come in and buy the product in store. Maybe you're not doing that now. Maybe you're just buying it through the Hybris e-commerce platform predominantly. But they said, we've still got manual orders and it's painful. So that's only 9%, but it's way more painful than 9%.
Right. So
the digital mop is a means to pick up email orders, EDI exceptions that don't automatically flow through, so that your customer just sort of, well, they just send you the order however they want to send you the order. They don't have the friction of having to go on board and use this process or that process. I'll take the order however you want to give it to me. Yeah, I might come and consult with you if you're consistently using the wrong SKU, the wrong price, the wrong part number, and this then impacts my ability to invoice you or my ability to deliver on time in full, my ability to invoice you quickly and make life easy for your AP team. You've got to approve that invoice. So there's some of the things that I think there's opportunity there.
And I really love the notion of a digital mop, Dan. That was worth the price of admission today. So
yes, it was. I was going to ask you if that's actually an acronym or you just call it that.
That's me. I say that. I mean, I think we've probably got
some
smarter buzzwords, but you know, as a guy who's not afraid to get on his hands and knees, do some cleaning.
I love it.
I do too.
Also, in that discussion, you gave us a great example of the practical use of AI and ML and some of those other technologies. And that finding a problem that needs that type of solution is better than so many of the companies you described who have a hammer and they're out there looking for a nail, right?
Right.
It's better to have a nail that's hard to drive and find a sledgehammer for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to add a point to that. So we do use RPA, robotic process automation, a little bit. Where there's a place to go and pull down bill of lading or shipping documents or invoices or sales from a portal, or maybe to push those documents back up to a portal, we can do that. I prefer to use APIs because if that system changes in some way, then the RPA might not work. So we did it, but I have to tell you, I've run reports and I've tasked my sales team to go and talk to all the enterprises who've mentioned RPA in the last 5 years, because when it comes specific to our processes, order to cash, procure to pay, a lot of folks are coming back saying, we tried it, it didn't really work, we didn't get what we wanted from it. I'm not here to say RPA doesn't work. I mean, I remember a visit to Koch Industries and worked with their CIO for 10 years, and they were explaining how they use RPA with fantastic results, especially on the shop floor, especially in the Internet of Things and on automation in many different areas. But we just see a lot of folks coming back saying, okay, well, if I specifically think about the order to cash and procure to pay components I've talked about today, then we want to look at a platform that really specializes on those areas.
So as we start to wrap up the interview, give us just a couple of thoughts looking forward about what the future is going to look like when it comes to order to cash automation.
I recognize that term, Scott. That okay was Dan. Quit rambling. Stick to the...
No, Dan, I'll tell you, I think me and you and Greg could probably put together an 8-hour episode. And we're not even touching some of our, as much as we love your thought leadership, we're not even touching all of your military stories, which we really enjoyed first go around.
Also, I could talk all day about not only about AI, how people misuse and instead should use or apply it, right? I think, and I bet you could too, Dan. So at some point we have to stop ourselves or we'd be here all night.
Right. That's what's behind the okay. We love talking with you, Dan. So what does the future look like, you think?
I think, and I saw this in I think when the new COO of SAP came on board, the joint leaders, and then that is just one person in charge. They talk more AI, more descriptive analytics, and they did talk about, okay, well, let's look at payment behavior. is payment behavior changing? Give us those alerts. Give us those insights where we're at risk. So that will happen. There's going to be more interest already. We see it, but there's more interest in the entire order to cash cycle, not just sending the invoice, but how long and how much effort is involved in chasing, getting them to pay, applying that cash so we can actually post it and into our open AR. So there's more, I think there's going to be a lot more focus from companies, even though I know, look, interest rates are an all-time low. I just got a mortgage and it was, you know, it was under three. That's what, that was all, you know, and it was under three. And I said to my loan, if you can just get, you know, I think she gave me 2.999 reoccurring. I'm like, it's under three. I'm happy. So even though interest rates are, you know, at an all-time low, I think there's going to be a lot of focus by business leaders in what is our cost of doing business? What is our cost of working capital? Because that impacts our cost of goods sold. And if we can collect the money so we can pay our employees, for example, if you're operating consulting, well, you know, you can't be waiting 30, 60, 90 days to pay for consultants. You know, that's, there's only so much margin you're making there, physical goods. So a lot of focus on the entire process, and I think a lot of the process on focus on visibility, ease of doing business, and controlling the fact that I think this demand for liquidity and these demand from customers who are like asking for longer terms and stretching their terms, I don't think that goes away if suddenly there's a vaccine. No, I think this is going on for a couple of years at least.
So much good stuff as always with Dan Reeve with Esker. So Dan, let's make sure that our listeners know how to connect with you and with Esker. So what's the best way?
Absolutely. The website, esker.com, or find me on LinkedIn and shoot me a note. And then I'll connect you with somebody smarter who can actually talk to you and understand your needs and work out if we're a fit or not.
Outstanding. And you referenced that there's two circles that you put in front of folks. I think we're going to put that in the show notes so folks can get a nice succinct view of all the different ways that you're delivering value.
There we go. Yeah, for anybody who is viewing the video cast, there you see the various segments that we play when it comes to procure to pay and order to cash. So I'll leave that there in case. Well, actually, I guess I shouldn't hijack your show. Did I break it? How do I get rid of it?
There's no stopping you. It's That's okay, right. Man.
You can only hope to contain one Dan Reeve. No, this is great. Dan, always a pleasure to reconnect with you. Y'all've got you. I really admire all the passion. I mean, there's so many different elements of this conversation that Greg and I enjoy, especially the second go round. But what is undeniable is the passion for what you do, and the impact you're making clearly in an area that the world just cannot get enough of right now. So, really appreciate your time here today, Dan, and I'm sure our listeners will want to connect with you afterwards. So Dan Reeve, Director of Direct Sales for North America at Esker. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks, gents. Really enjoyed it. Always good to have these sessions, and really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Likewise. Thank you.
So don't go anywhere just yet. Greg and I were going to wrap. So Greg, I'm gonna put the, you know, we've already asked Dan the $1 trillion question, but the $1 million question, Greg, what was your favorite element of what Dan shared here today?
What's so encouraging is we've been talking pretty much since this whole COVID crisis started. Companies would need to do more automation to move away from manual and spreadsheet supported processes. And one that companies, Dan is telling us, companies are actually going that direction. And it seems like in droves, that's really encouraging. And two, this manifestation of that by technology companies and solution providers that are ready to do it and are able to do it. I mean, think about this. That big company that Dan referred to earlier, they take 18 months to implement their technology, and companies are doing this in months or weeks to make a dramatic change in their business. And you want to talk about being able to reduce friction and make it easier to do business, right? Not only is Dan and the team enabling that with their solutions, but they're actually doing that, yep, right? By making it easier to implement. So that's encouraging. And I think it's about time. Technology does not have to be $100 million or $40 million implementation. right? Yep. We can cease to be a slave to the old model of bringing in a couple hundred consultants to plug in a technology. Now it's switches and dials and much, much easier to implement and get started and to start to recognize that return on investment.
Love it. And the other thing I liked throughout the entire conversation, he talked about how automation makes it easier for your associates, your team members, and makes them and their where they spend that time more valuable to the organization. Yeah. And that was a theme throughout. And we don't hear enough about that as well. So
yeah, 9% of incomplete orders, I bet, take up probably 30% of the time of reconciliation. Who knows what it is, but it's well more than just the 9%.
That's order. Right. Got to put problems like that in the headlock and make them go away. So right. It's good for everybody, right? Good for the customer, good for the team, good for leadership, good for the bottom line, you name it. So to our listeners, hopefully you've enjoyed this part two with Dan Reeve as much as Greg and I have. Of course, we'd invite you to not only connect with Dan, but if you like what you heard here, you can check out supplychainnowradio.com and learn a lot more via podcasts, live streams, webinars, you name it. And as always, our challenge to you, same as our challenge to our own team, hey, do good, give forward, be the change that's needed. And on that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.